Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse for Chiropractors. I'm your host, Dr. Don McDonald, author of the best-selling book, The Underdog Curse. We give vitalistic chiropractors a chance to learn from the best around the world, discovering how they overcame their challenges and achieved success. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Now listen up, it's time to crush the curse. Hello, podcast listeners. I've had a lot of questions about the Vitality Shift. This is a program that my wife, Brandy McDonald, and I have created, and people are just asking more questions about how they learn about it and what kind of forms it comes in. And so what I want to just let people know is that you can do the Vitality Shift two different ways. We have an online program called the Vitality Shift, and you can find information at www.thevitalityshift.com. And the second thing is we do a live immersion day where we spend basically 8 hours going through the whole program, role-playing, helping to move your whole practice more towards a vitalistic model. We really work on communication, refining your premise, covering neurological objective findings so we can actually measure subluxation, and then going through care planning. And we realize that a lot of people are different and so people heal at different levels. We've created four different healing archetypes, which kind of help us when we're doing the care planning process and also on reevaluations. So if you're interested in that, we actually have two live immersion days right now planned, one for London, England in June and one for Perth, Australia in September. And if you're wanting to look at more information about that, check out our website, www.trueconceptseminars.com. Again, that's www.trueconceptseminars.com. And we'll also put down any other new locations that we'll be hitting. So if we get to run into you somewhere around the world, we'd love that. And I just want to take this opportunity to explain a little bit about our program. And now you can get back to the podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host. And today I have another special guest. You might have heard her before. She's my honey, Brandy McDonald. Welcome podcast. Today is going to be our rambles. It's funny, we have a little community in our Vitality Shift program, and we always have coffee with Don and Brandy. We're recording this on a Saturday. It comes out on a Wednesday, but we just finished a full day of work and got to the gym. And so this is rambles with Dr. Don and Brandy with scotch.
So if you're listening to this on a Wednesday morning somewhere in the world and it's 7 a.m., that won't sound as good as if you're listening to this on a Saturday afternoon and it's 30 above.
Exactly. And so we're just enjoying our scotch, and we want to welcome you to the podcast. I just first want to give a shout out to everybody who's been listening. I want to thank you very much. I had a couple trolls come on my iTunes and, you know, do the old "we're not real doctors" thing. And there's no way this podcast can be doing this good. You guys suck. And I put it on Facebook, and I got about 12 reviews in 2 weeks. So I want to thank everybody from around the world who gave me some reviews to help counterbalance our little trolls. And with all your help, we just hit over 72,000 downloads. And we've just hit episode 50.
Awesome.
So 50 awesome. Episodes of Breaking the Underdog Curse for Chiropractors. So
that's exciting. And almost 100,000 downloads. Good job.
Yeah. And I hope everybody's enjoying it out there. You know, feel free to drop me a line on Facebook, share this podcast with other people too, because I know people are downloading and listening to it, but you guys are pretty quiet out there. So let me know how you like it.
So the silent creepers of the world.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, one of the funniest things for us was when we were in Cairo, Europe, in Malaga, and I was adjusting somebody and a table, and someone came up and said, "I recognize that voice."
But you had never met them before. They just recognized your voice.
And they didn't even know who I was, but they recognized my voice from the podcast. So I was like, that's pretty cool.
It's your radio voice.
So today, we want this show to be called "What Does Money Have to Do with It?" Because as chiropractors and healers and people who like to serve others, sometimes money is the last thing we end up talking about. And then that ends up creating the whole challenge, which prevents us from serving more people. Yeah. So I brought my special guest on to talk a little bit about that, because she's worked with a lot of chiropractors about that mindset. So where do you think this money challenge mindset comes from, my dear?
Well, isn't that $1 million question? Okay. First of all, let's preface a few things. If maybe people haven't listened to the podcast before, I am not a money expert. So you're never going to see me doing a Susie Orman or a TV show about like what to invest in. And so that is not what I do.
But you watch Shark Tank all the time, so you totally know.
Somehow I don't think that makes me a money expert. I am a mindset expert though, and I am a human behavior expert, and I've worked a lot with people and their relationships with themselves, and really money is just an extension of that. So I think that that's probably the spin I want to take today, is a little bit about, not a little bit about, let me take some scotch and then we'll talk a lot about the fact that, you know, money is really an extension of somebody's belief systems. And so I think we've done lots of shows, not lots, we did two or three relationships. We've done it on teams. Everything that that extends outside of yourself externally is always just based on a relationship you have internally with yourself. And money is just part of that. It's just with money in the world today, and probably always, there's just such a massive emotion behind money. And so it's hard to have an objective conversation about money with anybody, because we're so emotionally tied to money because of our experiences we've had with money. And I don't even necessarily mean altered emotions like shame and guilt and embarrassment. I just sometimes even mean elation and excitement. And, you know, so there's lots of different emotions that sit with money. And we pair those two together. Money is nothing. Money is like a piece of paper and coins. It only has, it's so interesting to watch. Like, again, I know nothing about cryptocurrency or any of the as I called it, monopoly money, because I don't understand it. Like it's somebody can just wake up one morning and decide there's value to something, and get enough people who believe there's value to something, and all of a sudden there's value to it. Well, that's what money is. We just happen to trade on value of this paper right now. And eventually it'll probably be something other than paper. It already is something other than paper. I shouldn't say it will be. There's lots of different ways that we exchange value. And so I think when it relates to money, so specifically, I think there's two people that listen to your podcast. I think there's chiropractors in practice, and then there's employees. So there's either staff members. We know that the general public listens to this. We know a lot of our patients listen to the podcast that are not necessarily entrepreneurs or business owners, but they might be employees making a salaried wage. And I think the mindset is the same. It doesn't really matter what you do, that money is really a learned belief system. So everything we learn about money, everything, unless you unlearn it, you've learned from your parents. That is where we learn about money. And it may not even be as obvious as money, but what we learn about the value of things, how we get money, what money means to us, how we spend money, what we think about other people who either have money or don't have money. We learn all that from our parents. Mm-hmm. And at some point, depending on whether or not we think money is serving us or you're serving money, we start to look at, are those beliefs actually serving us to where we want to go? And so money either controls you or you control money. And I would suggest a lot of people, money controls them. It's either lack of money controls them, or the desperation seeking of money to fill some emptiness controls them. And those are the two ends of the spectrum I think that a lot of us deal with when it comes to money. And neither of them have anything to do with money, and everything to do with what we believe and what we believe about ourselves and what we've learned as kids.
Yes. And I think a good way to start, and we've shared this with some of our little tribe, is kind of our differences, because you kind of got the two extremes on either end of the spectrum about money, where I'll talk about my experience with money, and then you can talk about yours. And so when we started dating, get married, the funny thing about it was, as soon as we got engaged, I wanted to get married right away. I, as most of you know, I had a hard time and still have a hard time. I still was delaying gratification, right? So I was like, hey, we got engaged, let's get married right away. And then—
Well, actually, first you should talk about how the ring even got made, because again, you were broke. Is there more than broke? If there's less than zero, you had less than zero, because you were in the deficit with debt.
Okay, this would be for those young guys out there that you're thinking about getting engaged. And well, you know what? I did it and we still survived, but it might not be the smartest way, but I probably would have still done it that way, because that was the way I got to where I am now. So it can't be too bad. Well,
again, there's no good or bad. There's just a story behind it, so people can understand the evolution, I think.
So I wanted to get this nice ring. And so I ended up having a patient who was a jeweler, which was great because then I'm like, hey, let's do some exchange of services so I can get some credit for this ring because I was broke. But I also didn't want to be embarrassed and give her a crappy ring because I was like, that's kind of embarrassing. But I didn't have any credit. I didn't have a house. I still, all I had was my student loans. I was net worth negative. Lots.
Yeah.
And, but the only thing I did have was this F-150 truck and
on debt, like on a truck payment. Debt.
Oh yeah. 100% on debt.
Have the truck.
So it's a truck that I owe. And so what I did was I went to the bank, which actually was funny because it was another practice member of mine who worked at a bank and she worked in loans department. And I was trying to get a loan for this ring because I'm like, I don't have money, but I need to get a loan for this ring. And I didn't have a credit card that would have enough credit to be able to put this ring on it. So I went to her and she's like, okay, what do you have for collateral? Which I didn't really know what collateral was. And I guess collateral means that if you don't pay your loan, they can come and take something away from you so that they can get part of their money back if you don't pay for it. And the only collateral I had was a truck that I had financed. And so what they did is she said, what we can do is we can refinance your truck and then mix your ring in the refinancing of your truck to get a loan that's worth way more, actually way more than the value of my truck. Which I'm actually surprised they even did it because if I wouldn't have paid the loan and they just took the truck, they would have been
negative.
So I did that to get enough money to buy this ring. And the funny thing is just down the road, I wanted to get a new vehicle, but I also wanted to pay down the truck. So at least the truck was worth the same amount as I owed on it. And I was accelerating the payments and it took years after, but the truck was depreciating at the same at the same speed that I was trying to pay that sucker off. So the value of my truck's going down while I'm trying to pay the loan off. So that's a tough one is to get a loan on a depreciating asset because not only do you pay interest on it, but what's valued is also depreciating. So everything's going down the tubes at the same time while you're quickly trying to. The best way to describe it would be like trying to wash the dishes really quick in a sink that the drains out and you're quickly trying to do it before the water all runs out. So anyway, I come from a background where we borrow money because we didn't have any money. And in my experience growing up, the only way we could get money is by borrowing it. And so again, we get back to getting married and then Brandy's like, I'm like, hey, let's get married. Let's do it in like 2 months. And Brian's like, we don't have any money. And I said, well, let's just do it anyway. I'm sure we can get a loan.
Let's get another loan.
What
else can I consolidate?
What else can I put on, like go to the pawn shop or something, right? And she said, no, she said, I won't marry you unless we already have money for the wedding. And I was like, holy crap, do you know how long that's going to take? And she said, yes. And it was about 18 months. And yeah, so we had to figure out what the budget was, which it was like, for me, who's like instant grad, let's just do it. This is going to be great. To actually sit down and plan out how much our budget for the wedding is going to be. And then pre-figure out how much monthly savings we have to do every month to save. So that by the time we get to the wedding, we pay for it clear. And so I'm glad we did it, even though I kind of bucked and kicked and complained about it. But my aspect of money was, if I had minus $1,500 in my account, that was zero because I just lived in my overdraft all the time, plus all my loans. And then we have Brandy, which you can explain. She came from the total other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. So for you, like as a kid, that's all you, even if that's what I was talking about earlier, even if you don't necessarily, even if your parents never sat down and said, like, we live every month in our overdraft, like as a kid, you may not even know that, but as children, you'd be surprised what you pick up from your parents. And for you, your dad was always a business owner. And so he was never an employee with a set income every month. So if you needed extra stuff, then it was on credit and credit.
Or you worked harder.
or he worked more hours or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah. And then more income would come in where for me, my parents are business owners, but they're what we call asset rich, cash broke because my parents are ranchers, cattle ranchers. And they live on a massive farm. They have 500 head of cattle. And you know, you might think, wow, like she comes from a wealthy family. We were broke. And as a kid, all I knew was that if we didn't have cash for it, we didn't get it. So we, in my entire upbringing as a child, I never one time went on a holiday with my family. So we never went on a plane. I wasn't on a plane until I was 25. We didn't even go camping. I'd never been in a hotel because that was frivolous. And so from my parents' perspective, the basic needs that we had were paid for on cash. So I was actually like, I think I met you before I actually really understood what a mortgage was. Yep. Because of course I didn't really even know what a mortgage was. I'd never had a credit card till I think I met you. I'd never had a personal credit card. Look at it, it all went downhill.
Come on. You've been on lots of holidays now. You weren't anywhere. You weren't even on a plane until
we met. That's true. I paid cash for everything. I made, you know, like I'm not that old. Everybody's always like, that was so long ago. I'm like, it was not that long ago. And my first job, I thought I was killing it. And I was making $8.50 an hour. And no matter what, so yours was actually, Don was minus $1,500 in the hole. If he got to zero that month, he thought he was up $1,500. I, on the other hand, always needed about $1,500 in my bank account above zero, FYI, because I never knew what an overdraft was. I'd never heard of an overdraft until I met Dawn. So we could not have come from different experiences growing up. And both were actually so polar opposite that I believe neither of them would have served us to the degree in which we are today had we not been able to unlearn some of the things that our parents had taught us. And again, whenever I talk about what our parents taught us, there's always some kickback, like, my parents did the best they could. They were amazing. I would say the same about both of our parents.
Yep,
they are who we are today because of our parents. But at some point, if you're not where you need to be or want to be, for that matter, you have to start unlearning some of the things that you learned before you can even remember your life.
And we have an amazing thing called free will.
Yes, of course. And choice and options. And we don't have to continue the patterns of the past if we choose not to. And for us, we just chose not to. And that just would be the journey over 1,000 miles, which took probably 15 years for us to really start to unlearn some of the things that our parents taught us. And along with that, whether or not we came from massive debt or I came from, you know, as I thought, being poor, where we never got anything extra. We never had fun food. We never had junk food. We never had anything, because I would hear all the time from my parents, we have no money. So other kids get that because they have more money. Or new clothes. You don't need new clothes. We don't have the money. So every year when school started, we had no money. And every year when I saw, you know, kids with fancy things at school, whether that be their school supplies or their new clothes, I never had that because we had no money. Now, I wasn't shoddy. I wasn't going up and out in tattered clothes, but I was wearing what I wore the year before for sure, because it was frivolous. Frivolous was a word that I grew up with from my parents. It was frivolous to spend money on things. I was never in any secondary activities. I would never have played organized sports. I never did anything outside of school because it cost money. And from my parents' perspective, that was frivolous and it really wouldn't achieve anything other than me having fun, and you don't spend money on fun. So that was my experience, where for your experience, your parents taught you, you should go do, we can't afford it, but we'll, whatever it takes, we'll make it happen. You're going to play basketball, you're going to play hockey, you know, we'll still buy your equipment, it might be secondhand. The kids grew up really experiencing things because your parents, even though they were cash broke, they put it on credit card.
Well, and to a point, right? When I was younger, because I think my dad, as he developed his business, he started to get, because again, that was one of the things my little sister said, was that when I grew up, I heard that we don't have more money more often, because my dad quite well with the business, they hadn't really got things off the ground. So I wasn't even allowed to try out for the traveling hockey team because they couldn't afford the traveling.
Yeah.
And so that's why I played basketball, because all you need is running shoes.
Right, totally. Versus hockey. Yeah, totally.
It's a lot cheaper. So like I did grow up with that in my mind and everything. And also too, the ironic thing is that when I was around that age, because my parents had to get financing, that was when, I think it was in the 80s when the interest rates went ballistic. So it was crazy because I think my dad on the business that he owned on the building, I think the interest went up to about 15 or 16% interest on the mortgage on his building.
Yeah.
So I just want you guys to imagine what would it be like to be paying 15 or 16% interest on your house mortgage. Like, yeah. So everything he was pounding in there was just basically paying for interest. And my first little lesson for money, which was really good, is my dad always said every time I worked for my dad since I was about 8 years old, I started off making like 25 cents an hour, making condiments, like wrapping those little condiments at a restaurant. And, but he said 50% of everything you make has to go into savings for school. Because he knew if you get to school, like you'll have a different life. Cause he worked his butt off. My parents worked their butt off so that we could have a different life. Mm-hmm. But out of that 50% I could use, I did save that. And I put it in a Alberta bond, Alberta government bond at 18% interest. Now, could you imagine having a bond that's backed by the government that gives you?
I don't think they have those anymore.
No, they do. They do, but it's like 2% or something like that. So I made like, I was the only one who made all this huge, I made lots of money so that with my extra, I could buy a shock bike. So I bought a bike with shocks and had a fake plastic gas tank on it. It was really cool.
Nice. Nice. So I think when we talk about like what our parents taught us, I don't mean to suggest that they taught us nothing positive about money. Because there were in everything that we learn as kids around money and success or financial freedom or financial stability, through all of that, there's always these things that have been instilled in us that are actually really positive and actually motivators. And I don't think we ever get rid of that, even when we unlearn some of the lies, because I think a lot of us, so if we talk about chiropractic and chiropractors, some of the pathology that exists in the profession today is the fact that we know this because we work with them. We have chiropractors that don't have any money for retirement. And then on the far end, we have the young chiropractors, especially in the United States, who have a broken system of being able to get money at their fingertips whenever they want, if they're American. So now it's different if you come from a different country and you go to the United States. Thankfully, you do max out your student loans. And then your family is putting stuff on line of credit. You're getting lines of credits for the bank. But in the States, if you're an American citizen, you could just like, you need some more money? You could just loan it up. And these kids are graduating with these crushing student loan debts. And their income to debt ratio just doesn't match. And nobody's taught them about money. And so it just appears like money is appearing in their bank account. And if they have not had the opportunity to learn about what it takes to build a practice, when you graduate with $250,000 worth of student loans, and you don't have the business skills, or worse, you have a relationship where perhaps you go into a clinic and you are on a salaried income and it's not enough to even start chipping away even at the interest, you're never really fully getting ahead.
Yeah, that's the challenge.
Yeah, so I think we're at both ends of the spectrum in the profession, and a lot of it has to do with the fact is I think we have so much emotion around money, and so therefore to have a conversation about money is really, really challenging. And I think part of that is that we have to start looking at, can we just have an objective conversation about money? And under that objective conversation comes our conversations about what does it take to run a business? What does it take to save money? What does it take to look at all the business skills that we need? And because we have such an emotional charge on it, we just never are able to have those conversations because we have all these belief systems about money.
So if you've never learned the law of delayed gratification, you kind of get into that habit of getting money up front and being able to spend it without actually creating value to get money in the first place. And then it's easy for people to defer because they'll allow you to defer the student loan payments. And like I got one person in my class where they deferred it for 3 or 4 years and it accumulated something like $30,000 or $40,000 of interest on top of their student loan. So, and then their excuse sometimes like, well, I'm paying such a little bit down that it's only paying interest. It's not making a dent in it. But you don't realize it's the power of compound interest in the wrong direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And if so let's talk about that. We're talking about beliefs. One of the biggest challenges with money. So let's say you're a young doc with a ton of debt and you feel like you're not getting ahead. You're not chipping away at it. What I find is almost too common is not being able to understand that you do have the ability to delay gratification as an adult. So with money, So what we call, it's funny, we call the younger generations entitled, right? They've been entitled to a bunch of stuff. So, you know, their parents bought them stuff. They're living at home till they're 28. They think they need to own a house. They think they need to get all of this stuff. And I would suggest it's probably less being entitled and more being about the fact that we've not taught them how to delay gratification, which is the proverbial marshmallow story, which doesn't just happen, which is not just happening to the generations below us. It's the human condition. We don't know how to delay gratification. So now if we extrapolate that inability to delay gratification towards money, what happens is when you start to earn some money, the last thing you want to do is have to put it towards your debt. Just like the last thing you wanted to do when we got married was to put $150 away a month to save for this wedding we wanted to pay cash for, because it's, first of all, it's boring.
Yep.
Secondarily, it actually means that you have to bypass things that you do want right away. So no, you can't buy all the nice stuff, and you're not going to buy a house right away, and you're probably renting a one bedroom or a basement suite apartment, and your car is probably broken down. All the stuff that we think that we need, we don't need it, we want it. And we haven't taught people how to delay gratification as it relates to anything. But when it comes to money, it becomes dangerous, because now, because the system is so broken, you can defer loans. And then all of a sudden it's just building, 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 building. And then you're just drowning in it. So we work with docs that have been in practice for 15 years and they're still paying off their student loans because they deferred it for so long. And in the United States, it's compound. So it's just, they can't. And you know what? And the biggest part about money, so take all the emotion out of money away. The biggest challenge that I see with money is it actually chips away somebody's self-esteem. Yep. Because when you can't achieve something, or when you feel like you can't achieve something, or when you feel like there's no result at the end of it, where if you're never really feeling like you're getting ahead, particularly either with paying off debt or saving money, it starts to chip away your self-esteem. When you have a lowered sense of self-esteem, then for sure you can't delay gratification, because immediate gratification gives us a kickstart of adrenaline, and it happens on the part of the brain that's not sustainable, but it makes us feel good. So now you've got like a double whammy, in the sense that your esteem is impacted, and then you do really need something to make you feel better. So there's no way you're going to start saving and living on cash, and because really what you want is you want an immediate feedback because you don't feel good about yourself.
Yeah, and there's a thing called the Parkinson's Law that we got to watch out for, because the Parkinson's Law basically says as you start to increase your income, subconsciously you automatically increase your spending.
Yeah.
And the challenge is if we haven't been making an effort to pay the loans, again, we're going to talk about savings too because it's important to do both. But if we haven't made an effort to pay the loans, and subconsciously we just start buying more stuff. So now what we do is we start increasing our lifestyle overhead and our lifestyle costs. We still haven't paid down our student loans, and we still have nothing at the end of the month.
Yep.
And that's why I think part of it too, how many chiropractors have we talked to where we want them to actually find out where they are financially, and they have no clue because they're afraid and they don't even want to look at it.
Yeah. And so that's what happens, because again, you see, the thing is, everybody thinks that they can escape the reality. It's mind blowing to me that if we can just not talk about it and bury our head in the sand, that somehow it's going to go away. Or that if somebody can take care of our loans and we'll set up all these systems to try and get away from paying off our duty and our investment into becoming a chiropractor, that somehow it's going to be okay. Like it's astounding to me that for some reason we think that that's going to be okay, and that's not going to start to bleed out our life force. And I don't care what anybody says, when that's happening to you, whether you want to admit it on paper or not, it is always on the back of your mind. It's always there. It's basically a weight on your shoulders. And it is amazing, as we talk to people about, you know, give us not even your numbers, just give us your budget. The majority of people, A, do not know how to do a budget. And our young chiropractors do not at all know how to do a budget, particularly if they're from the generation where they lived at home, they worked part-time, but all that money was theirs to spend with however they wanted. They either loaned undergrad or their parents paid for undergrad. They start to graduate. Now they start to make some money, but they don't have any understanding of a budget. So they've never had to buy laundry soap. They've never had to buy stationery for the office. They've never had to buy pens. And so they have no clue. And that, I think, is and nobody ever talks about it. Mm-hmm. Like in school, maybe they did something, maybe in a business class, but it's sort of not real. And it doesn't take their lifestyle cost into considerations. And by the way, if you're the sole income earner, you know, if you're a single chiropractor or you happen to be the chiropractor supporting your family, your children, you need to put your lifestyle costs into your overhead costs. It's not just the cost of running your business. Yeah. You're the sole, your income is coming from the business. So your lifestyle costs are part of it. And I would say the majority of people we work with have no clue what that looks like. They've never sat down and looked at it.
And a lot of people that have their own practice are paying like 60% overhead.
Yes.
Or some are more as well. Like it's funny because, you know, you'll hear some associates in Canada, you know, it's anywhere between they get 40 to 50%. And then sometimes they're saying, well, that's kind of ripoff. And I'm like, are you kidding me? There's people who run a practice, have to do all the work, and they are paying more overhead and have to do everything as well.
Yeah. So at some point you have to, you know, if you opened your practice, your overhead's about 110%, usually in the beginning. So, but that's just us not ever having conversations with people and also us not learning how to delay gratification. Everything is about delaying gratification. Everything is about the fact that when you graduate, there's a sense that now I've made it. Like I've just spent all this money on becoming a chiropractor. Now let the income roll in. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You know, and it requires, but again, you only know that if you have learned that. Mm-hmm. If you have not learned that from a child, you need to unlearn all the stuff that makes you feel good in the moment and start to learn what actually makes you feel good in the moment is to do what you say you're going to do. Start to see that little nest egg improve. Start to see the debt come down. That actually builds your self-esteem. And anything other than that, no matter what anybody tells you, chips away at your self-esteem.
Even if you're pretending you don't know, because you know. Your subconscious knows. In the background, you're just every month you're getting deeper and deeper. You're actually decreasing your net worth every single month, right? So,
and then you throw in embarrassment and shame, those altered emotions, because then that starts to happen. And now it becomes shameful and embarrassing. And now you really don't want to talk to anybody. And it just goes worse and worse and worse. And we see chiropractors closing their doors, going bankrupt.
Or we spin it the other way. And here we're working with chiropractors through the Vitality Shift to try to make sure their premise is lined up with their procedures and make sure that they're staying congruent in their practice. And they've been beat up because they have no finances and they have no self-esteem, that they have a hard time then even changing how they describe chiropractic. And
yes.
If they're trying to just move away from the conditions model into the vitality model, they don't even have enough energy to do that. And it's all been that slow in the background, just slow bleed on their consciousness because of that debt.
Yeah, always. And I would say that that's actually more the norm than chiropractors killing it. There's a small percentage of the profession that's killing it with chiropractic alone. I just want to mention that. Like not doing anything else with chiropractic alone. There's lots of people doing lots of other things, doing very successful things in other side hustles and other businesses, but we're working with chiropractors. And so I think that, again, because there's so much emotion behind this, we can never have a decent objective conversation about it because everybody gets offended or they feel hurt or they're ashamed. And rather than understanding that's just what you've learned and you can unlearn that. Mm-hmm. But you have to also then find mentors or people to help you, because we've talked about our financial story a lot. You know, this is the number one reason relationships break up is because of money. It has nothing to do with money. Right. It has everything to do with the fact that the two people in the relationship had contraindicative values, because money is really a byproduct of your value system. And so they can't come together on what their values are. Money just happens to be the main thing that we can see. It's tangible. And we fight about whether, you know, how somebody spends money, makes money, where we spend the money, how we use the money, blah, 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 blah. And so you got to find people that resonate with you to mentor you, because I would say at some point it's tough to get yourself out of it because you don't really know. When you're in it, you don't really know what's driving you until somebody external to you can kind of say, dude, like, let's wake up. Like, what are you doing? And then people are like, God, I never thought about that, which is what happened for us because we were so different with our money, but we were different in our values.
Yeah.
So it was more about what our values were around money, where you were like, I'm killing it at minus $1,300 every month. I got $200 extra. And I'm like, this continues for another 10 years. We're not going to make it. Right. And and also you don't want to parent your partner in money either. So I'm not going to parent you and go, how much money did you spend? Where's the credit card? Let me look at the bank accounts, which is what happens in a lot of relationships. So we had to get mentorship, which we did. And then we always credit Dr. John DeMartini's financial mastery program for saving our marriage in that perspective, because he really did make a big impact on us.
Well, and I think one of the key things that, and again, this is the key thing you've done, if you've ever done the breakthrough experience or the financial mastery, I don't even know if he does that anymore, but what the key thing was for me to identify my top values, which was family and Brandy, right? And so if I identified my top value was Brandy, and then I started to link, how could paying down my student loans help to improve my relationship with her? Right? Like, depending on what your highest value is, and if you can link 50 to 100 things that the reason why that would help improve your top value, you start to shift that into the top value, and then it doesn't become as much work. So the first thing that I did is I almost gamified paying off my debt. Mm-hmm. And I started saving at the exact same time. Mm-hmm. So the thing we were talking about that with our group, our Vitality Shift group the other day, is that if you just pound your debt down like crazy and you have no savings,
yeah,
if you get hurt or something goes wrong, you're still totally screwed.
Yeah.
So you still want to have that cushion. So what I did was at the same time as paying down my debt, I actually started saving in a different, we call it the immortality account, the account you're not going to touch. And the first goal is to be able to save 3 months of overhead cash in that, so that if anything goes wrong, you're good. And then what I did was I took my lowest student loan or my lowest debt, and I start any extra money, I started pounding onto that.
Yeah.
So I tried to just nail off my lowest or my lowest loan. And as soon as that loan got paid off, I took that whole total payment and I just bumped it to the next lowest loan. And then the cool thing is it's almost like a snowball effect. It actually starts just like massively accumulating the way that you're paying off debt. And then on the other aspect, because we're saving regular, you know, when that was, we started that about 12, 13 years ago. To see that snowball is pretty amazing too. And that gives you that peace of mind that, you know, hey, if I want to go in and tell the truth about chiropractic and not truly
worry
if this person's going to accept care or accept me, because I can just be there and be a messenger. You have $1 million in the bank and you do a report of findings.
Yeah.
It's totally different than you cannot pay for dinner tomorrow and you do a report of findings.
You know, and that's what nobody wants to talk about, because nobody wants to talk about that, because they feel like it's, what's funny, again, this is our belief system, emotion around money, because everybody's like, well, sad about the money. I'm like, okay, well, unless you have a charity, like you're running a charity or a free practice, it's all about the money. We're in business. And I feel like it's almost been, it's so far the other way with the service, that just provide the service and the people will come. Well, you got to have some hard business skills as well. And part of the snowball effect happens because your esteem starts to improve. So when you actually, it's a bit like working out. I find that people that don't continue to work out because they don't see results. And when somebody doesn't get results, they start to feel like, ah, it's a waste of my time. I don't like it. It's boring. When you start to get jacked or whatever your goal is in the gym, you're like, holy smokes, I actually see some muscle. You actually, that's the snowball effect of the esteem. You actually want to do more of it because it creates more results. And so then the actual input that it creates, you're no longer seeking the result anymore. You're actually seeking the input because you know it provides the results because you've seen the results. So you know, when we chipped away on those little loans, that was like hugely exciting. When we paid off our first loan, it was massively exciting. Yep. So then we're like, I could do that. I could pay off $200,000. I could pay off, right? When the little loans started to get paid off, the big loans seemed possible. But when you don't even start, or if I can save, I mean, we saved nothing in the beginning. We're telling our shifters, I think we were doing like $100 a month or $150 a month or something in the beginning, which was a stretch for us. And we lived We lived on cash envelopes where every week we would have amount of cash that we had to get through the week. And so and it would be so much for gas, so much for going out, so much for clothes. And sometimes we would steal from our wants for our needs, because although we might have wanted to go out for dinner, if we didn't have gas to go to work, we would have to steal from our dinner envelope to put gas in our car so that we could go to the office, or I would go to my job. So that became the input, because the results were we were watching the savings nest egg start to grow. And then that became more exciting for us because, you know, if you're a chiropractor and you don't have any other business, and that is your business, you're the owner operator in your business, and something happens to you, what's going to happen? And if you provide for your family, it's just conversations we just put our head in the sand and we hope we never have to have. Well, you need to have those conversations. You need to tell the truth. And we see today with the advent of so many GoFundMe accounts, that's why we're seeing what we're seeing. Because we haven't taught people about money, and we don't have any money intelligence. And we're unwilling to have the conversation because we feel judged, shamed. That's all lies that we've learned. We've got to be able to have the conversation.
Yeah. And again, even stuff like getting insurance and stuff like that is important. Again, you know, contact someone who's a professional when you're looking for this, but like really to get a term life insurance, because especially, you know, if you're a young family, and especially if it's a chiropractor and something happens to the chiropractor and that's the income earner and the other spouse is,
which by the way, we've had friends that's happened to.
And if you just, you know, go, hey, I've only been in practice 5-10 years. I don't really need life insurance. You know, you can get into the fancy life insurance where you can do it into the bank. Like I do that where it accumulates in there, but you can just get term life insurance. Yeah. It's really quite like very inexpensive. And then that's just peace of mind, knowing that something random, like a car accident, something random happens, your family's still looked after. And I think our goal is if we can look after as many financial things as possible that shuts off, that kind of closes that loop in our brain, then we can use our brain energy for really cool things like being on fire in practice and being really focused and present. But when you're always worried and go, hey, if this happens, we're screwed. If this happens, we're screwed. If this happens, we're screwed. And that's always playing in the back of your mind. It's hard to be present. And we all know if you're not present in practice, it's not going to turn out good.
Well, and I think because, you know, we have three businesses, right? We own or operate a practice. We have an online program and we have a coaching program and we have a seminar series. We have four separate businesses that we run. And it's funny. I remember us years ago, we would say we would not be able to afford to go to seminars, but we put them on credit cards and we'd go. And today a lot of people say, oh, nobody wants seminars. Everybody's going to do it online. And what I've realized now doing this now for 10 years is actually a lot of people can't afford it. They have no freedom to get on a plane and go wherever they want. That's the state of the profession, but nobody's talking about it. How do I know that? Because when I put on a seminar, I get asked all the time. Mm-hmm. I'd love to, but I can't pull together $900. I can't pull together $2,000 to get on a plane. I can't, or I can only do that once and I can't do it. Like, so that's the level that we're dealing with. And it's, you know, I will say to everybody listening what I said to you 15 years ago, and you didn't believe it then, so I know a lot of people won't believe it now. As an observer from the outside looking in, at the time I was an employee, I could not understand why money was a problem. I just couldn't understand it. I was an employee making $35,000 a year. And in my mindset at that time, that's as much as I was ever going to make. That was the top of my pay grade as a social worker in that particular location. I was limited to that. So in my mind, I thought, that's all there's going to be for me. You're a business owner who is not just a business owner. You're a chiropractor. Not only a chiropractor, you're a profession that has the ability to save somebody's life. I don't understand why you cannot see that your earning potential is unlimited. I could not wrap my brain around it. Today, 15 years later, I understand all the complexities of what it takes to run a business and all the bullshit that happens in people's minds as to why that doesn't happen. But I still stand by that. I still stand by the unlimitless potential that we have in our chiropractic offices, even if you do nothing else, to earn really as much as you want to earn. Mm-hmm. Does that require a lot of unlearning about money? Yep. Because we marry money with evil. We marry money with being selfish. We marry money with being greedy. We marry money with sales. We marry money with all of these emotions that actually hilariously do the exact thing we're trying to avoid, which puts a barrier up between us and the people. Mm-hmm. Because they drive and alter our behaviors and alter the way that we view the world. And, you know, today I still stand by that. What I didn't know then that I know now as an entrepreneur is I was right, because now I'm an entrepreneur and my earning is unlimited. Why? Because I'm the result. Everything that I earn is a result of all the work that I do for myself. It's all a result of my belief systems, my values, how much value I put on what I do, all of that stuff that I didn't know that as an employee. Mm-hmm. So I guess, but if you can't have the conversation with yourself, or you don't know how to have the conversation with yourself, you got to find somebody to help you have that, because we're not thriving financially as a profession. I also know that because I ask for donations. I belong to the Australian Spinal Research Foundation. I want donations. I want members. The fact we're having a hard time raising money, or, you know, if I say I want to, you know, we want to fund $1 million of research over the next 5 years, I should have people throwing thousands of dollars at me, tens of thousands of dollars at me. Mm-hmm. Nobody is.
Especially it's for vitalistic research.
So, you know, that, and it's not because people don't want to, by the way, tons of people support our mission. We're a broke profession. And we're generally broke because we have such an emotional charge on money. And it's all stuff we've learned. It's all stuff my parents told me too. It's frivolous. It's selfish. God, how many times have we been told by people, oh, you don't have kids. How selfish. You must be nice. You must have all that money to buy all those things. Right?
They call us dicks, double income, no kids.
Not dicks. No. Dinks. Double income, no kids. Oh my God. That's going to have to be like.
Oh, that's hilarious. We don't have to bleep it. Hey, we're here. We show everybody makes mistakes. You make mistake, whatever. We made mistakes.
You know, so
I'm a dink, not a dick.
You know, nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody wants to talk about, they would rather have their judgment on how somebody's living their life. And listen, you know, whether or not somebody's, the problem, I guess, today is that you don't really know, based on smoke and mirrors, whether somebody's really, really doing well or whether they're living beyond their means.
Right.
And, you know, if I look, that's not a problem in chiropractic. That's a problem with the human condition, because we can't delay gratification. And we know just statistically, the majority of the world is living beyond their means, because in Canada, people are like 1%, 2% away from bankruptcy. So yeah, like, they're living in some pretty nice houses, driving some pretty nice cars, you know? So I think the difference is for us, at some point we realize we wanted the freedom to have enough money that if we wanted to do that, we could. The difference would we choose to? If we wanted to live in a $10 million house, would we? Yeah. Do we choose to? No. If I wanted to buy a Louis Vuitton, could I? Yes. Do I choose to? Yes. You know, so it's just, there's a big difference there, right? There's a versus I'm now living beyond my means. I actually can't afford it because I feel better when I have all this stuff, where that's not really what it's all about. It's not about your stuff. It's not about the money. It's not about how much money you make, actually. And I'll tell you, you know, coming from nothing to having what we have today, and also working with people who had nothing, because my career was with people living in destitute poverty, women who were survivors of street prostitution, leaving family violence situations, men who had lived on the street for most of their life. They had nothing. And watching people now step into having something required them to unlearn all the lies they believed about themselves. Money was just secondary. For them to get a job and sustain a job and get income and have a paycheck for the first time, start to move into apartments, start to buy cars, start to buy their kids Christmas presents. None of that training that we did, none of our support we did, had anything to do with money and everything to do with their self-worth.
Yes. Amen. Well, and I think we should also talk about some dangers too, because we've been talking about the one who, you know, maybe someone who's in practice who kind of haven't quite got off the ground, haven't got their feet under them yet. So they're kind of in that financial issue. Then there becomes a second level of practice where you actually start doing well, right? You actually start getting some traction, you're getting some confidence, and then all of a sudden you do come into money.
Yeah.
And the challenge is, if you're not ready for it or not feel worthy of it, yeah. a lot of times you're going to lose it. And so yeah. a quick example, and if you read my book, you'll know that, you know, we lost like $120,000 in an investment because we were kind of, I was seduced by a big return.
Yeah.
So you're seduced by a big return. And thank goodness I did follow the rule that DeMartini said was never invest more than 10% of your net worth in something that's speculative,
yeah,
or something that's kind of off the grid or something weird. And so other chiropractors that I know didn't do that, and they put a lot more in than that and lost it all. And so I just plead with everybody out there, when you do start hitting success, also get some financial education about how to invest wisely as well.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the biggest learnings for us was we had spent many years giving our money to other people to manage.
Yeah.
And because we were seduced, now we actually had some money to give to somebody to manage.
Yep.
And that also is where you and I varied, because in my opinion at the time, I'm like, all I know is I have a bank account, leave it in the bank, for God's sake. Like, it's our money. If we give it to somebody else, they're going to, like, we'll get more of it back. And so there's a degree of that that is true. And then there's a degree of that that starts to get almost too good to be true.
Yeah.
And if somebody has a seduction of the fact that you don't have to do anything and you make a whole ton of money, there's a problem there. And that's what happened to us when we lost all that money and everybody else lost it with this guy. Not because he was shady. He also had his own challenges with money. And belief systems about himself. And so there's this fine line, I think. And then at some point along the way, we just decided we're not actually investing in other people anymore. We're going to invest in ourselves. And because we actually have the biggest return and bang for our buck when we invest in ourselves. Now, do we invest? Of course we do. We still invest today with somebody. But a lot of our money is invested in ourselves, in our businesses, and in what our businesses can produce for us, which is far more than what somebody can put into a market, into the stock market or into real estate or whatever else we've invested in. It has been far greater than that. So, I mean, the diversity, I think, is important. Again, I'm not a money expert, but I think the diversity is really important. And, you know, at some point, it's about 80 to 100 a week, people start paying their overhead in chiropractic. And I think that's where the danger zone is. And the danger zone meaning now I've got some extra income. But you never really have enough for total freedom. So you have enough to buy some stuff. You have enough to go on some holidays with your kids. You're no longer feeling stressed out. You're putting a little bit away for loans. Your savings are, historically, we found the savings are, right? And then after that, then what? There's nothing really extra. So I think once you get into any more money above your overhead getting paid and a little bit of income coming home, now you got to think about, well, what are you going to do with that? Because the seduction to do something so you get even more back is really, really high, or to buy stuff, just to have stuff, because you've never had it before.
Totally. And so what my rule for that now is, if you want to increase your lifestyle expenses, what you need to do is you need to make three times that. So yeah. if you want to buy something, like, this is the rule, if you want to buy like a car, and just to make it easy, say it's $1,000 payment per month, then you need to generate an extra $3,000 a month, because yeah. what you should do is you should be going $1,000 to the car, $1,000 to savings, and then $1,000 to your tax account.
Yeah. Because
this is another big issue too, is a couple of chiropractors who are friends of mine learned about the savings thing and said, this saving thing's amazing. And they save like a maniac, but they didn't save anything for taxes. And then as soon as tax year came around, they had to rob their savings to pay their taxes, and they're just hooped. They're back to zero again. So the key is to be able to find a level of savings that's comfortable for you. And then when that's comfortable for you, you never take from it.
Right.
Of course, unless there's an emergency, but you never take from it.
But that's why it's there.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that too many people will be, hey, I'm going to actually oversave, but then they are not doing it wisely, and then they rob from it. And again, we want that to be your self-worth account. Like, that's your net worth, which increases your self-worth. And whenever you steal from your self-worth, it decreases your self-worth.
Yeah.
And that's the best way to explain it, is that, you know, you're not going to touch that. And so that just helps you to grow.
And why? Because every time you delay gratification, it increases your self-esteem. And every time you say you're going to do something and then don't, it decreases your self-esteem. And so if you just extrapolate that really basic law to money and you look at your behavior around money, you start to ask yourself, how much are you chipping away every day at your self-esteem? And I will guarantee the answer is a lot.
Now, did you want to share one more thing before I ask the next question?
No, go ahead. What's the next question?
No, I was just going to say, now we've talked a lot about that. Now let's talk about the benefit of having a lot of money. So if a bunch of chiropractors had a bunch of money, what kind of things could happen?
Well, let's, you know, there's always purpose and protection. So first let's talk about purpose. When you are independently wealthy, which means really if something were to happen to you, God forbid, your business were to go up in flames, you would have the resiliency to come back. You could survive. You could provide for your family. All was good. You really can do whatever you want to do. It's, you know, I think when we look at the billionaires of the world doing some of the stuff they're doing, despite what you think of them, the reason you see them having ideas that nobody else has is because they can, right? That they're not just their basic needs are taken care of, right? So, you know, once you have everything you want in the world, now you know, you're looking really at that pure aspect of just purpose. And the engagement that you have in whatever your purpose is really, really high. And it might be just how you're in your practice with your people. Even it changes how you are with your people in your practice. Mm-hmm. The protection part of it for the profession as a whole, particularly in our model where there's not as many chiropractors as in the other model of chiropractic, we feel really victimized a lot, and we feel helpless to the external factors of the world because we're broke. So therefore, the external influences of the world tend to direct how we practice. They direct how we do things. If one of us gets attacked, or God forbid, like something happens to us, there's nobody that can rally around us and help us, because influences money when it comes to power, when it comes to changing things, when it comes to lobbying, when it comes to lawyers, when it comes to, you know, getting out there and actually fighting the fight, you need money. And nobody has any money. So we've seen enough individual circumstances where people have been really struck, and they're on their own because nobody really has the financial wherewithal in a large group setting. I mean, I don't want to compare us to other big companies that have lots of money and lots of power and lots of influence, but they did get their power and influence because they have lots of money, right? Mm-hmm. And we just don't have that. And that's one of the problems that keeps us as small as it keeps us, because collectively we're not financially strong.
Well, and I think too, like, you know, just in Canada here, we had a big National Post article about pediatrics and chiropractors should not be seeing kids. It's crazy. And the funny thing is that if we aren't good with our money, we immediately take that and we go on defense.
Yep.
And if someone does have a money, they will actually have enough creativity to come back on offense. And like we saw the great article by the ICPA, to come back with something that's actually, you know, rebuttaling the debates rather than other organizations that might be retreating from that debate.
For example, let's pretend you had $1 million. Well, first of all, I'd want it to go to the ASRF. Let's pretend we had $2 million. $1 million goes to the ASRF and our 5-year plan's done. We fund all the studies. The other $1 million goes into a public marketing campaign. And the public marketing campaign is slayed all over TV. It's slayed all over social media. It is basically the best marketing campaign that the world has. Probably need more than $1 million. I'm just saying $1 million. Say 1.5 million, 2 million. Yep. Let's say 5 million. Let's say 5 million.
Yeah.
And now we have this campaign, and this campaign is really targeted at the world to understand the fact that they have a nervous system, and that their nervous system is not only a thing that keeps them alive, it is the expression of who they are. It's just covered in limbs and a head and body and skin. But it's really every experience we have, everything that happens to us, everything that we relate to in the world is really this expression through this nervous system. And when it is disordered or subluxated, we are lesser versions of ourselves. And we have different versions of this campaign that go all over the world. And it goes viral and it goes on TV. What difference would that make? It would make a massive difference. Why don't we do it? Because we're broke. That's why. And it's collectively the profession can only be broke because individual chiropractors are broke.
Yeah.
And no, would that be everybody's value system to put their money towards that? No, it wouldn't be. But it would be a lot of people's value system to put their money towards it. They just don't have it to give. So there's the collective consciousness of money, and then there's the individual consciousness of money, both in protection and in purpose. And I think both are important once you have the freedom and the stability that those finances provide to you.
Yeah. And I bring this back to when I, went out for dinner with Dr. John DeMartini, and I was so curious because I've always loved the chiropractic profession so much. And I said, what do you think the number one thing that could help the chiropractic profession? What would help the chiropractic profession the most out of anything? And he said, the number one thing is if more chiropractors saved more.
Yeah. Yeah. Period. And what's funny is in those times when he was only working with chiropractors, what was the number one complaint about him?
He's too expensive.
No, he talked only about what?
Money.
Yeah, right? That was the biggest complaint about him. All he talks about is money. So I find it, so if you want to know what people's emotional charge is, if they ever go see somebody who's doing Tony Robbins, him, like I could name a million people. They're like, all he talked about was money. I'm like, really? Because I was at the same event and I didn't hear that one time.
Yeah.
So if you ever want to know what your emotional attachment to money is, see how much that comes up in your day-to-day talking, because you could see how much of that is just so deeply ingrained in somebody's psyche.
And somebody might be thinking that listening to the podcast right now.
They're absolutely going to think that thinking about the podcast right now. They're absolutely going to think that.
They're like, why can't you just talk about chiropractic? Stop talking about money.
Yeah, it's not about the money. Okay.
Yes. Well, and again, if we didn't have extra savings, I would never be able to do this podcast because this podcast cost me a lot of money.
The only reason
I do it for free.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we would not have gone to 11 countries, which I primarily have done for free as well. So yeah. Like we can only tithe back to the profession because we have money now. Right. The reason we didn't do this 12 years ago is because we had no money. Exactly. So yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. So, tell us a little bit about the mastermind. We have a mastermind that we're doing in Toronto here in July. And maybe tell some of the listeners, because we don't have very many spaces available, but maybe you can explain a little bit about what we're doing. Because you do become like the people you spend the most time with.
Yep.
And so we did want to take an opportunity, and I think this is for us too, and Dr. Peter Kevorkian, we wanted an opportunity to get really intimate with a smaller amount of people.
Yeah.
Just really dive deep into their life. So maybe explain a little bit to listeners about that.
Yeah, I think we're all at a point now where we've worked a lot enough in the profession to see, you know, I love the big seminars and I love people coming to our smaller immersion days, but there's in all of those courses and events, there's always one or two people who want more, and they want more than what either I or you or Dr. Peter can give them, like on a phone call or a coaching program. And it really is, it's around transformation. And in order for somebody to really transform, you need individual time and you need to be in an environment where your brain is open to all those possibilities. And so we last year met about this idea and it's coming to fruition, which is called the Transformers Mastermind. And so it was started from us because we love the movie The Transformers, and in particular you love the movie The Transformers, and I also love it. And even if you don't love the movie or don't love the, you know, if you don't love all the storyline, the idea behind the movie is really kind of what got us going from the first movie, because we were like, this is like chiropractic, and
you know, we're trying to protect the world, even though we're getting killed, and like,
yeah, and the world doesn't care, and
yeah, they beat us up, yeah.
And so Optimus Prime is just, he's a good guy, even though he seems like he's not a good guy. And so anyways, that's actually, the Transformers came from that movie. And then we approached Dr. Peter Kevorkian, who has a really unique skill that you and I don't have. And we said, what do you think about putting together a private mastermind with 10 pretty evolved people that want to move their life to the next level? And he's like, of course, I'm all in. And so we've met twice now. We'll meet one more time planning it. So we called ourselves the Transformers. I'm Optimus Prime. Dawn is Bumblebee. So Bumblebee, if you've not seen the movie, is a yellow car who loses his voice in one of the wars, and he can't get his voice back, so he uses everybody else's voice. And so through the radio, the way that Bumblebee talks as the Transformer is he uses everybody's voice through his radio. And then in the very last show, Optimus Prime has sort of goes goes haywire, goes to the bad side. And the way that he snaps out of it is Bumblebee, who's always been his protector and always been by his side, talks in his voice, in his own, finds his voice, and Optimus Prime, who is the leader of the Transformers, snaps out of it. So I'm Optimus Prime, Dawn is Bumblebee, and then there's this little guy, Wickwicky is his name, and he's the actual human in the show. And he's like this kind of like geeky guy who just, who doesn't really want the responsibility of saving the world, but he's been chosen. And it takes him a few movies to really step into the fact that he's the chosen one. He's the chosen human to be the liaise between the Transformers and the humans. And he has to really step into that role. And that just reminded me of Dr. Peter, who does all this work in the profession and has no lines or boundaries. And he's, I think he's the chosen one. And he's just, you know, finally, not finally, but realizing that he's that guy. And so we're the Transformers, and 10 people will have an opportunity to work with us in our specialty. I mean, my specialty, obviously, if you don't know what I do, is I do a lot of transformation on people's perceptions and emotions. So really the hard drives of their brain, we do a lot of work around what drives people and why they make the decisions they make, and really fracturing a lot of those hard drives and building new neural pathways. Peter's specialty that is just, again, special. I don't know anybody who can do it like him, is really transforming people's fear and fear into that purpose or that love space. And nobody does it better than he does. And I'd say most of us live a lot of our life in that space of fear, and just really trying to step out of that and really step into that love space where really all things possible happen. And Bumblebee's transformer, his specialty is creativity. And there's probably not a guy in the world. There is not a guy in the world that has the ideas that Dawn has. And like as people work through this process of what do they want to do and aligning their purpose and aligning their values and aligning what they want to do with the next stage of their life, the ideas that Dawn has, it's actually spectacular. My brain can't keep up with your ideas. So it's happening Saturday, July 28th. It's in Toronto.
The amazing conference center. Tell them a little bit about the beautiful room.
It's at the Sheraton downtown in Toronto. If you've not been there, it's on the top floor of the Sheraton. So the boardroom overlooks the CN Tower. It's floor to ceiling windows all around the boardroom. It's beautiful. We held a meeting there last year and it was spectacular. It will be an application process. We've decided that not everybody can just come. We want to make sure the right people are there. How do you know if you're the right person? Well, you take the time to do the application process. You're really in a space where you're ready for this kind of work. This is deep transformative work. This is not a seminar or a workshop. And you have the money.
Yeah, and it's not cheap, but we're going to work hard because we're going to do a pre-call with all the people before the full day event, where we're really going to connect and you're going to create more connections and those circle of influence is going to get bigger. And then we'll do a follow-up afterwards. So it's not just the one day.
Yeah. You're going to have the 10 people to support you through the process before and after, and we'll have a social on Saturday night, downtown Toronto. So it's going to be it'll be an elite event for sure. And I think it's going to be really special. So we don't have the sales page up yet. So in the meantime, if you're interested, shoot me an email at info@brandymcdonald.com, or you can Facebook me. You don't have to be a chiropractor to come. I've been asked that already. It is not just for chiropractors. Of course, if you're a chiropractor, we'd love to have you. This is for humans. You might happen to be a chiropractor, but it's for any human that wants to come. This is not just chiropractic specific. So we already have, I know a couple of people that want to come that aren't chiropractors.
A few people have taken the spots too. So I think
we've already got a couple of spots. Yeah, that's true. We only have 8 spots left. So we'd love you to apply. And if for some reason this round didn't work out, or you felt like you weren't quite ready, definitely if this is a success and our Transformer group feels like it was something that was worth their time and effort, we will do it again. So excited for that coming up.
Yeah. So that's info@brandymcdonald.com if you're interested in that. And again, like I do with all my guests, what are your final words of wisdom to leave the underdog nation out there about Monday or about anything that's top of mind right now?
Well, I think you and I try and teach based on our experience. We try not to teach purely out of theory. And I think, I think with money, part of the biggest growth process for us was understanding we had no intelligence around it. And everything we were doing was just patterned behavior and rote learning. And once we realized that, it was incredibly freeing because we knew that we could change the situation that we were in at any moment we wanted to. Yes, it required a lot of work, but the moment we realized that, oh, wait a second, it doesn't have to be this way. I actually can change my situation, was really where things dramatically changed for our relationship and our intelligence around money and our belief systems around money. And by the way, we stopped judging everybody else as well, because we realized that, you know, what we're doing is what we're doing and it's important to us, and what other people are doing is what they're doing, it's important to them. So I would say that at any point, like I say all the time, you can always change the situation that you're in. Once you realize that you have that power, everything changes.
Awesome. Well, thank you, my dear, for being on the podcast again.
Thanks, Dr. Don.
And so everybody out there, you know, I just can't stress like how important it is to increase your savings. So if you've learned one thing today, please pay yourself first. Please be like I am right now, where the most expensive bill I have monthly is my payment to myself, to my immortality account. And I'm super expensive, super, super expensive. And that's great, because that is also kind of builds your self-worth too. So all I'm going to do, I usually have a few points from each episode. Today, I'm only going to say one: save money and crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.